Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, the 10th of November, welcome, 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 friends, to the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
My name is Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and thank you for being here on this Monday. Did you hear that storm last night,
Cherry? I did.
Woo! Thunder.
Thunder.
Lightning.
All of it.
And just around the same time, symbolically. Mm-hmm. Some big thunderclaps coming out of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Last night, a handful of Senate Democrats and one independent who caucuses with the Democrats agreed to a deal that could ultimately reopen the federal government after a record-setting shutdown. Now, there has been some thunderous disapproval from many in the Democratic Party about this deal because it does not lock in extended subsidies for healthcare, which was the big sticking point that led to this entire shutdown. Today, going to have a robust conversation about it. We have a couple of reporters, including one who was basically breaking this story last night for the New York Times. And then at the end of the show, we're going to hear from a Democrat, Brendan Boyle, representing Philadelphia here in the House of Representatives, who disapproves
strongly
with this deal that some of his fellow Democrats made. So let's get into it. We want to hear from you. What's your reaction to this step toward ending the shutdown? Was it all worth it? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you are on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And Studio 2 listeners, I really hope you weigh in today because it was a bruising 40 days for Democrats and the country. I mean, and it's, some would say that, you know, there started to be some momentum building, you know, with the election last week.
Sure.
But did Democrats give in too soon? Please call, email your reaction to this deal. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, please share the video because I want more people to join into the conversation.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Perhaps share it on your cell phone. Story number one of our news roundup.
Yes. So scores of Philadelphians have fallen victim to a widespread cell phone theft ring. Mm. Law enforcement got wind of this theft ring this past September when about 100 people attending a concert at the Highmark Man got pickpocketed for their cell phones. Theft victims were able to use the Find My app to trace their iPhones. And it turns out that many of these phones first went through Paterson, New Jersey or New Rochelle, New York, before ending up in Hong Kong or in other places in China, where authorities say there is a huge black market for stolen cell phones from Western countries.
Hmm.
All of this, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, they did a great write-up on this. By the way, China does not blacklist phones that are reported stolen. That is something U.S. and European companies tend to do. Blacklisting a cell phone makes the phone basically useless on a network.
So they got to take it to China for it to work, essentially.
Exactly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so this phone theft at concerts, by the way, is not uncommon. And some say it is becoming more and more widespread. But because the cell phones are not, you know, they're not high priority for folks, for law enforcement, it's just becoming more widespread. This year alone, there were 2,600 reports of stolen phones, but this could be low because a lot of people don't even report those types of thefts. But it's so interesting because we all go to concerts. We all go to these events.
I don't go to many concerts. I guess that works out for me. I don't know.
You put the phones in your back pocket a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah.
And boom, pickpocket it. You look up, your phone gone, and it's in China somewhere. You know,
well,
and someone else is using it.
What's amazing about this whole sort of chain is that it ends with this pretty, you know, high-tech type of theft, which includes, you know, getting the phone back online and sometimes even scamming the original person to have them unlock their phone. So like this side of high-tech type crime.
Yeah.
But it starts with like Oliver Twist style pickpocketing.
Old school.
Which I didn't even know was really still happening. I hadn't heard much about pickpocketing as a type of theft. Maybe I was just out of the loop.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize there were people that were still out there who were skilled in that type of crime. So I certainly would not have been watching my cell phone like that at a concert. And so I'm glad they did this reporting, because this, to me, was a little out of left field.
Yeah. Bottom line, secure your cell phone, especially at concerts, so you won't become a victim. And you think about at a concert, you're bumping up against people, you're dancing, you're moving around.
Whoa, I didn't know we were doing that at concerts.
But I'm just saying, you know, because it's...
We're bumping against people?
Yeah.
Okay, not my type. I mean, I go to like folk festivals. Okay. We're just sitting in the grass, just lazily sipping, you know, like... You know, iced tea that's like spiked with 5% vodka.
I mean, I was jumping up and down at the Wu-Tang concert.
Okay.
And so if somebody bumped you and you might not feel the pickpocket.
Sure. I mean, the moral of the story is we go to different types of concerts.
I know.
I'm just sitting there falling asleep. Yeah, if I fall asleep at the concert, you know, I might get can still get pickpocketed.
That is true.
Anyway, story number two. So you've been to the doctor and a lot of visits go like this. You know, the physician is asking you some questions. You're answering the questions. And while you answer, the doctor is not looking at you. They spend most of the time looking at a computer screen, typing notes as you talk and describe your problems. But perhaps those days are coming to an end.
Mm.
The Inky published a fascinating story today about how more and more healthcare providers in our area are using AI-assisted tools through their cell phones that record what patients are saying and automatically turn those conversations into usable notes about what happened during the visit. The upside here is obvious, Cherry. The docs spend less time on paperwork, more time actually listening and conversing with patients. And if you've waited forever for one of these appointments, you know how frustrating it can be when you're talking and the person is kind of like not looking at you and just sort of tapping away, which they have to do. So that's the upside, right? The downside, of course, we're talking about data privacy concerns, the technology, the transcription technology can still make mistakes. There are other types of concerns as well in terms of documenting things for future potential lawsuits because the notes are not like a true transcription. They're a modified transcription. But anyways, interesting tech that could really change the way we interact with our doctors.
So interesting. I'm all for efficiency. I have one of those long-awaited doctor's appointments today, and you want your doctor's full attention. And this is becoming something we do. I know on Zoom, I have an AI assistant that just sort of records everything.
Yeah.
And, you know,
we use this type of technology a lot in our profession.
Time. Yeah. That being said, I do have a lot of concerns. As a patient, should we be notified when we sit down? Should we have a way to opt out if we just don't want to be included in
that? So in Pennsylvania, you do. I don't know about every state because this is a two-way recording consent state. So the doctor has to ask you, is it okay to record you?
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't do that, by the way,
it would be a problem.
Please let your healthcare provider know. Yeah.
And then my other concern is that, you know, we've talked about this. AI hallucinates.
Yes.
There's a lot of problems with AI. It's not always accurate. And so sometimes... Who's going to check the notes and make sure that whatever was said is accurate?
And would doctors get in the habit of not checking because they trust the technology so much and it's you know, freeing them up to do all the other types of things, and they just sort of blindly start to trust the tech.
And then could I also just order a copy of all the notes and just say, hey, doc, I want all the notes from all the can I just get that? And then I just want to make sure the AI isn't necessarily training themselves with my data.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Because that's another big issue.
Yeah, that's a good point. All right. Story number three.
Yes. Whole Foods is debuting a new shop bots. Let me do this. Let me start over.
That is a tongue twister. Go ahead.
Whole Foods is debuting a new shop bots concept in the Philadelphia region.
Hmm.
Let me explain how it works. This is all according to Philadelphia Magazine. Pretty soon, you can go shopping at the Whole Foods in Plymouth Meeting. You can decide you want something like a special flavor of Pringles, which Whole Foods may not sell. And this shop bot will get you the item and have it waiting for you at the register when you are ready to check out.
How?
Boom.
How is that possible?
Yes. So Amazon owns Whole Foods. And what Amazon has done is built this 10,000 square foot micro fulfillment center right next door to the Plymouth Meeting Whole Foods. That fulfillment center will house about 12,000 items. And you can shop for any of these items while you're at the Whole Foods through the Amazon app or through screens that are placed in the aisle.
It's like a robot grocery store next to the actual human grocery store. Wow.
Exactly. And so once you place those orders, these autonomous shop bots, they will sort it, they'll retrieve it, and then they'll put it at the register. And while you continue to shop like you would normally shop at Whole Foods.
So it's a little dystopian sounding, but also kind of sounds pretty useful.
I know.
I don't know.
Because sometimes you go to Whole Foods, they don't always have the brand you want.
It's a huge problem with Whole Foods.
Yeah. Yeah.
Specifically. But I will note that Plymouth Meeting has a track record of making shopping history.
Oh.
40 years ago, the first ever American location of IKEA was opened in Plymouth Meeting. So if you want to start a new type of shopping experience for the American customer, you could pick worse places than Plymouth Meeting. They apparently, people like being on the front end of the wave in Plymouth Meeting.
Yeah. And by the way, if you don't live near Plymouth Meeting and this wouldn't be convenient for you to go out there,
sure.
You know, Amazon and Whole Foods are planning to eventually roll this out other places.
Yeah.
And Amazon has been really at the forefront of grocery store technology.
For better or for worse.
I just used one of those dash carts at the Amazon. Yeah.
Yeah, so, no, totally.
Yeah.
They're leaning into it, as they say. Anyways, we're leaning into a little politics talk today because it does seem like there's a deal to end the government shutdown. We want to know about your reaction to it, whether this whole shutdown was worth it to you. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org, and we will be right back.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. America's record-setting government shutdown is not over, but it appears to be sunsetting. A key group of seven Democrats and one independent, who I will now dub the Oscillating Octet, signed onto a plan late last night.
If the GOP-controlled House follows suit, the government could reopen later this week. That means workers rehired, SNAP benefits restored, and eventually flights rebooked.
But will all of this leave Democrats with remorse? Many in the party sensed momentum and wanted their senators to hold the line until the GOP relented on extending health care subsidies. We'll get into all the messy details and the politics later this hour. But first, let's give out our questions of the day. What's your reaction to this step toward ending the shutdown? Was it all worth it? Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And later this hour, we'll hear from a Democratic congressman who opposes this deal to reopen the government. But first, let's introduce a pair of journalists who can tell us how this deal came together. First, we have Katie Edmondson, a congressional correspondent for The New York Times. Katie, it's great to have you on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
We also have Sahil Kapoor, the senior national political reporter for NBC News. Sahil, so nice to have you back on Studio 2.
Great to be back.
So before we get into it with both of you, I guess I'll do a little mood setting based on the comments we're getting right now. I'll read one from Emmanuel. I am not just fuming, not just erupting volcano, not just nuclear fission. I am creating fusion energy. I am so PO'd. This was a wasted effort. Democrats are cowards. Let's bring in a caller now. This is Chris from Newtown Square, I believe, also pretty disappointed. Hey, Chris, you're on Studio 2. What's your reaction?
Hi. I am also angry, frustrated, resentful, disappointed. After all those weeks, and for what? For absolutely nothing. Because we know, we absolutely know that they are not going to keep their word. They haven't kept their word about anything yet and do anything about the Affordable Care Act. I know that Trump and his administration would like to get rid of it. They don't like it. They don't like Obama. And the election on November 4th, all the people that voted blue, it was sending a message that, yes, we are behind you. Please hold the line. And so what do they do? Turn around. And the whole thing with the airports, I think that is also the administration making a problem to push people to be like, oh, well, we better give in now because there's all these issues with the airlines. I think it was all made up by them.
Yeah.
And
well, thanks, Chris. Chris,
we got to jump into the conversation.
We got to jump into the combo, but we feel the passion and a lot of folks agree with you. Okay. So let's, before we lay out the details of this plan, you know, Katie, I just want to get your firsthand account of when this deal started coming together, when you started to hear rumblings about it, and whether the timing of this surprised you as a reporter.
Well, I think you have to look at the group of Senate Democrats who ultimately backed this deal. These are Democrats who were really uneasy with the idea of continuing this shutdown and had been telegraphing that they were uneasy about that for days, if not a couple of weeks now, certainly before the elections in New York, Virginia, and New Jersey on Tuesday. A lot of these are retiring senators, senators who have been here for a long time, who really pride themselves on getting to some sort of bipartisan deal. And so I was not surprised to see that it was this group of senators that ultimately decided to be the ones to say, all right, let's vote to reopen the government. I think the message they got from the elections on Tuesday, they saw how much momentum there was, particularly from their grassroots, from the Democratic base, and said, okay, maybe this is going to add on sort of a few more days to the shutdown. But fundamentally, this was a group of senators who said that the amount of pain that our constituents are feeling, whether they are constituents on SNAP, right, who rely on food stamps, whether they are air traffic controllers, this is not tenable for us to keep going on this way.
Quick follow-up, Katie. Was there, we haven't, we'll get into the full details later, but was there a provision in here in the deal that you think got them to eight or got them the seventh and the eighth vote? Was there like a real clincher in here that created the group of eight?
I think that if they had needed a ninth vote, for example, if one Republican had suddenly flipped their vote, I think there would have been another Democrat in the caucus who would have been willing to vote. I think essentially there was sort of an unspoken agreement among some Democrats, certainly not among the progressives who wanted to keep the fight, but among some Democrats that this shutdown simply could not go on. One thing that I will call out is that the vote of Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia really was clinched by the fact that he was able to win this language in the spending bill that is going to require the administration to rehire federal workers that they laid off during the shutdown. And that for him was integral to winning his support.
By the way, Diana says, I'm so disappointed that moderate Democrats have sold us out. We could have had a great outcome and momentum for the future. Now we're back to square one. And so I want to go through what exactly is in this deal and what exactly is left out. And Sahil, we'll bring you into the conversation. Could you break it down for us? Just sort of what did these eight sort of agree to and what specifically that they wanted that they didn't get?
Yeah, absolutely. So the crux of the deal is a short-term government funding bill through January 30th, which means we get to do all of this in a few months. A mini bus package of three appropriations bills that fully funds the, certain parts of the government through the end of next September. This was kind of the low-hanging fruit in the appropriations negotiations. There's always some stuff that the two parties can generally agree to without a whole lot of controversy. And they were able to get these three done. Now, this is important to Democrats because this is the package that fully funds SNAP through the end of next September 2026. And that was important to them. So even if there is another government shutdown, this whole drama around SNAP and benefits being cut off and hungry children, that won't happen again. And what Katie mentioned, I think I would say that was probably the clincher to get the requisite number of Democrats. The reversal of the layoffs, also known as RIFs. Now, Democrats who are against this deal will look at that and say, well, you're just getting the president to reverse something that happened in the midst of the shutdown, which might not have happened if there wasn't a shutdown anyway. So they don't exactly consider that a win. I think your first caller captured the extent to which a lot of the Democratic base is going to be incandescent with rage about this deal. And then it does not, and this is the key part, it does not include any guarantee on Affordable Care Act subsidies. There's no guarantee of an outcome. What Democrats did secure was a promise from the majority leader, John Thune, to hold a vote in the Senate on whatever it is that the Democrats want to come up. It still needs 60 votes. There's no guarantee it's going to pass the Senate. And even if it does pass the Senate, Speaker Mike Johnson has made abundantly clear that he's not making any promises of even a vote in the House. So Democrats might have just lost on that Affordable Care Act subsidies issue entirely. And I think that's where a lot of the anger from their base is coming because they are on the right side of public opinion on this. It's a very popular issue, and it would cause premium hikes for millions, about 22 million Americans, if this money does expire.
Yeah, thank you, Sahil. And Katie, I have a quick follow-up that ties to that. I mean, any insight on how these oscillating eight, as Avi has, you know, named these folks. Why? That is a glaring thing that Democrats have been strong on from the very beginning, you know, extending these subsidies. Any insight on why these oscillating eight were okay with not having that included or anything related to this part that would guarantee some type of extension?
I mean, I think the short answer is something that Senator Angus King, the independent from Maine, told us as he emerged from a closed door meeting yesterday, where it seemed that everyone in the Democratic caucus sort of came to the realization that this deal was done, which was that the ACA is really important. He said we are going to continue fighting to try to extend these subsidies, right? But it can't be at the cost of all of these other people that are suffering right now because they are hungry, because they do not have enough money to be able to buy food. And so I think that was the calculation. Now, I do want to point out, right, as Sahil mentioned, right, the public polling shows that really the public is behind Democrats' stance on this, that the public wants to see those subsidies extended. Look, I will be honest with you. I think Democrats' best hope for getting those subsidies extended would have been for President Trump to really take a leading role in negotiations, to essentially use his own political weight to make the rest of his party agree to vote for something like this. I don't know that a majority of House Republicans would have wanted to vote to extend those subsidies because they are so opposed to the concept of putting more money into the Affordable Care Act, right? A law that they sort of stridently oppose, many of them. And so I think part of the calculation, and I don't know the Democrats want to say this out loud, is that they felt like they had waited 40 days and that was not happening, right? In fact, the White House and the Trump administration seemed to not only to not care about trying to get a deal on the healthcare subsidies, but indeed were trying to use the shutdown to inflict more pain on more people, right, in ways that were choices. For example, not using emergency reserves to pay for SNAP to make sure hungry people could get the food that they need. And so I think the sense that there was not really an imminent breakthrough on those subsidies did fuel some of the decisions of these Senate Democrats.
Could not draw Trump into the negotiating room in a substantive way. Interesting insight. Want to read this comment from Jim on YouTube. Republicans to Democrats, quote, of course we'll hold the football while you kick it. Don't you trust us? Invoking Charlie Brown there. Kate from New Jersey, one of our regulars, says the Democrats blew it. They need to get rid of Chuck Schumer. He does not have his people under control. I want to interrogate that a little bit with you, Katie, about Chuck Schumer's role in this, because you said something earlier that struck me, which is that you thought there were actually more than eight who would have agreed to this. But what I was kind of hearing you say was that there were more than eight who would have voted for the package, but they strategically picked eight who maybe were retiring or not up for election in a while to kind of take the fall, which sounds to me like a bigger group of people involved in planning this. And I don't know whether Chuck Schumer's in that bigger group of people, but can you help us dissect that a little bit? Because the eight are the ones that are out there. The question to me is, like, who's below the surface on this iceberg?
Well, I would push back on the idea that there was some sort of broader sort of concerted effort here. What we know and what reporting showed out in real time was in the past couple of weeks, there were about a dozen Senate Democrats, all centrists, all who have talked about their discomfort with the shutdown, were meeting and talking. That's sort of where I'm alluding to the fact that I think there probably could have been more votes had there needed to be. That being said, I think, right, at the end of the day, something that is maybe unique to the Senate is that the individual senator has a lot of prerogatives, right? The way that the Senate is structured means that any individual senator really is able to have a lot of leverage, particularly when there are thin majorities here. Now, Senator Schumer obviously took a lot of heat back in March when he voted to keep the government open, when he lined up the votes to make sure that there was not going to be a shutdown. He took a different tack this time, right? He opposed the deal himself. I think the fact that a lot of these senators are retiring, to be honest, also would have made it harder for him to try to, quote unquote, whip their votes, right? Because when you're retiring, that saps a lot of leverage to be able to say, even in a situation he had wanted to be able to say, well, you know, maybe we'll have to talk about, you know, your committee assignments, maybe we'll have to talk about X, Y, and Z. When you're retiring, those pieces of leverage simply aren't there.
Yeah, I want to remind our listeners that you can call in our questions of the day. What's your reaction to this step towards ending the shutdown? Was it all worth it? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop the comments in the chat. We have Susan from New Jersey on the line. Susan, you're on Studio 2. What are your thoughts about this step to end this shutdown?
Hi. Yes, I am very disappointed. I am a federal worker. I am going through my fourth furlough, and I am mandated to still work, so I go every day. But I was 100% behind this. I may not personally be affected by the health insurance per se, but I felt it was very valued thing to stand on, and I was behind them, and I was proud of them for holding the line. I feel like you had to think of it as this is a pain that you're going to feel now, but you know it's going to go away. Mm. Whereas the pain after is going to be huge, and it's going to be painful for a while.
Can I ask you, and feel free, Susan, to, you know, say this is too personal, yeah, but as someone who was, you know, in this position as a federal worker, did you feel like you had a future breaking point? Like, I can go this long without a resolution to the government shutdown? Did you have a pain point in mind, or was for you, was it open-ended? I am willing to go, yeah, at this for a long, long, long time.
So for me, I was in a better position than a lot of other people. Yeah. I have a spouse who has a decent job and our bills are paid. So for me, it was open-ended. Yeah. I was like, yeah, man, let's fight. Let's go to the new year. But, you know, a lot of the people I work with, their morale is very, very bad. It's very bad. And so I do understand why things needed to change, you know, but at the same time, I feel like it's just very disappointing. Yeah. I just, yeah, feel like it's going to be worse for people on the other end.
Mm. Thank, yeah, you. That's Susan from New Jersey. Yeah. By the way, I had someone, Alan, on Facebook who says, I've been caught in the crossfire of this government shutdown. I haven't been paid since September 24th, yet I've been working every single day. This shutdown is disgusting and absolutely deplorable. A budget agreement should have been reached a long time before this deadline. Mm. A shutdown should never have been an option. So people feeling, you know, Alan feels a little bit different than Susan. But, I want to bring you back into the conversation, Sahil, because I wonder, you know, are the Democrats in some ways sort of rewarding the Trump administration for inflicting pain on the American people by giving in at this moment? And I want to get your thoughts on that, because there were, and Katie talked about this, there were these points where, you know, the administration just could have paid out SNAP. They chose not to. They probably could have kept the airlines and things running a little longer, but they chose not to. And now it seems like the Democrats are giving them some kind of a reward. Your thoughts on that and people's perception of that?
Yeah, I think that is absolutely the perception of many Democratic voters, which is why I think you're going to see, you know, outsider candidates who are running against establishment candidates energized in primaries. You've already seen some calls for Senator Schumer to step aside as leader. We've not heard it from any Senate Democrats, so I don't think that's going to happen because only Senate Democrats get a vote on that issue. But yes, I think for Democrats, what they essentially taught the Trump administration was that they would be willing to do this for a certain period of time, but when the pain gets too severe, they're not willing to withstand it. And the truth is, there are a number of Democrats who went along with this who were very skeptical of the shutdown idea in the first place.
Yeah.
And frankly, a number of moderate Democrats, from my reporting, were shocked at the political success of their own strategy, especially after they won not just somewhat, you know, in blue states and on Tuesday. They won blowout victories by much bigger margins than just about anyone projected. They won state House seats in Mississippi, not exactly a blue state. I mean, it was a thumping victory. And the economy was a big issue. Affordability was a big issue. Costs were a big issue. All the things that Democrats have made this shutdown about. So the polling also said that more voters blame President Trump and Republicans than blame Democrats. Now, you can understand if you're a Democratic voter looking at all of that and wanted the party to fight, you're thinking, if they won't do it under this circumstance, then when will they? So I think that's the circle that party leaders have to square.
Yeah.
But I don't think it, it Look, as far as the White House and the administration and Republicans were concerned, I don't think there was any situation where they were going to cave on the ACA subsidies. In fact, they've dug in and moved further away from supporting any extension of that funding. And probably the only play now for Democrats is to lean into the politics because they have a big political advantage. The great irony of this, and I cannot emphasize this enough, the great irony of this shutdown is that if the ACA funds expire, it will be Republicans and the president's party who pay a big price in the 2026 midterms. Voters blame the party in charge, and now Democrats have made abundantly clear through the course of the shutdown who is on the side of extending the funds and who is, you know, who would be responsible if the premiums go up for millions of people. So if there is some political silver lining for Democrats, they might look at that, but I don't think they're there yet. I think Democrats are still annoyed about it.
Margie has really wants us to name the folks who voted, the Democrats and the one independent who voted in favor of this package. So I guess public service here. Angus King, Maine, Tim Kaine, Virginia, Dick Durbin, Illinois, John Fetterman, Pennsylvania, Maggie Hassan, New Hampshire, Jean Shaheen, New Hampshire, Catherine Cortez Masto, Nevada, and Jackie Rose in Nevada, if folks hadn't seen that already. Kimberly from Collingswood, interesting comment here. The upside is that the administration was forced to make it clear they will starve people in order to get their way, and the House will need to reconvene to vote on this bill, and Johnson will have to swear in Congresswoman Grijalva, who has been denied her seat, guaranteeing a vote to expose the Epstein files. We'll see, but that is certainly on the table. And going to court to force SNAP benefits to be canceled is an excellent campaign slogan for Democrats to motivate people to vote in the midterms, I hope. Not even listed there, but maybe adding to this, I wonder, Katie, how the filibuster or the looming threat to the filibuster played into all this, into the thinking of the Democrats who ultimately agreed to this compromise. Because, I mean, wasn't that nuclear options kind of floating out there as well? We might not even need you guys in the end if we go ahead and mess with the filibuster in some way. Did that play? Do you think that was a factor at all in the end?
You know, I didn't hear that from Senate Democrats. I think that there were actually some progressive Democrats, maybe on Capitol Hill, certainly off the Hill, who were maybe thinking when they saw President Trump demand that Senate Republicans abolish the filibuster. I think you had some progressive Democrats saying maybe, sure, right, make our day. We've hated the filibuster for a long time now, right? One day it will be our turn. We'd love to have you guys be the ones to rip the Band-Aid off. But look, I think the story of this Congress in a lot of ways has been sort of how extraordinarily compliant congressional Republicans have been when it comes to catering to President Trump's demands. His demand that they abolish the filibuster has been one notable area where they really do not want to budge. And it actually, I think, is less of an issue of politics for them, although certainly they fear the idea that they would be the ones to get rid of the filibuster and then usher in sort of in a Democratic trifecta, a Democratic ability to, say, make D.C. and Puerto Rico states, giving them, you know, two more senators each in those cases. But, you know, as I alluded to earlier, in the Senate, any individual senator has amassed a great deal of power just because of the way the rules there work, right? And the abolishing the filibuster sort of saps them of a lot of personal power. And I think that's one of the reasons why you saw actually a lot of Republicans not only resist those calls from President Trump, but actually just pretend that they weren't even really happening.
Yeah, I want to bring in another caller. We have Rosemarie from Narberth on the line. Rosemarie, you're on Studio 2. What are your thoughts about the step towards ending this shutdown?
Well, I'm a Democrat. I'm disappointed, but I will forgive them, with the exception of Fetterman, who I think is way out of line. I will forgive them if they really start playing hardball in how they run for re-election. I would like to see this ad. I'd like to see an ad with a split screen. On one side, you have the mother who hasn't eaten in 3 days because she wants to feed her children. And on the other side of the screen, you see the great Gatsby party that was going on during those very same days. That's the kind of fighting that I'd like the Democrats to do for me.
Thank you. That's Rosemarie from Narberth, who says, you know, Democrats got to fight harder. Is this deal guaranteed at this point? Or, you know, as we hear people's reactions sort of coming through, Is there a way for Democrats to sort of backslide, maybe skip a step and not have this deal go through? I just want to get your thoughts on that, Sahil. Katie, do you think there's a way for this to fall through now that they're hearing from their constituents, who many of which are upset, Sahil.
Procedurally, it is technically possible. Yes, this advanced yesterday, late last night, on a vote of 60 to 40, which means it has literally the number it needs to pass. If you subtract one vote, then it cannot advance. And there are more procedural steps that the Senate has to take before it can get to a final vote. So those 60 senators, in other words, those eight Democrats, what did you call them? The oscillating octet. I love that.
feel free to steal that. That's for anybody, not copyrighted.
Thank you, Avi. I appreciate that. No, I won't do that. But those eight Democrats have to hold. So in theory, one of them could peel off and say, I no longer like this deal, or, you know, I thought it entailed this and I'm no longer supporting it. But that would be surprising at this point, because they've cast their lot in here. They've made their case. You know, they've put their names down, and it would have to take something unusual or extraordinary for them to back out at this time. So I do think this will pass the Senate, barring something unexpected and extraordinary. It could take a few days, because in the midst of those procedural steps, any one senator can slow this down and run the clock for a couple of days. And then it has to go to the House. And we've not heard much from the House at all about this. This would be a situation where I can tell you for a fact that the vast majority of House Democrats, if not all of them, are going to vote against it. I think Jared Golden is the one exception, the centrist from Maine, who voted voted with Republicans on the existing stopgap bill. But nearly everyone else, if not everyone else, is going to be against this. So Republicans, with their tiny majority, are going to have to get on board, as they frequently have. And just FYI, you're going to hear from a lot of House conservatives saying, oh, no, I don't like this deal, and maybe I'm going to vote against it. Do not believe them. They always end up getting to yes in the end. We've seen this play too many times. Yeah. For me to look at any of these members and say, no, you're not going to vote.
Well, we were talking about Lucy and Charlie in the football earlier. Mm-hmm. You're saying the same for House Republicans supposedly being against
Bottom line, which is my way of saying this is very likely going to make it to the president's desk. It would just be a little bit messy and dramatic in certain moments before it gets there.
Do you agree with that, Katie? Sahil's prediction / assessment that this is pretty darn likely at this point, even though there are many more procedural steps to go.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, again, as Sahil pointed out, this is a short-term spending bill that goes through the end of January. So we'll have more fun to come in the months ahead.
Well, but as we get ready to wrap up, I mean, there is that looming possibility if we do this again in January. And then you sort of try to play it out. Like, if Democrats tried to do this again, could they muster the same backing from the American people? You're shaking your head, Sahil. You're saying you think this was their shot. They have, you know, relented now. And what do you think, if they tried this again, it would be
fill in the blank.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, they might muster support from the American public. I don't doubt that they can do that. But there's no way Republicans will look at that and say, oh, hey, maybe they won't cave this time.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we have to back down this time. I think what Democrats taught Republicans this time around is that they have a breaking point, which comes sooner than the Republicans' breaking point in this. And by the way, just one aside on this, I mentioned that the ACA subsidies, you know, that's a political liability for the president. That's according to two of his own pollsters who have worked with him very closely, say, have pleaded with him and pleaded with the Republican Party to extend those Obamacare funds, because they say it would negatively impact MAGA voters and it would turn voters against the GOP. SNAP benefits as well. There was a time about a decade ago in the Romney-Ryan era of the Republican Party where Democrats overwhelmingly won voters who make less than $50,000, the biggest beneficiaries of SNAP, to the tune of about 20 points or so. That's not the world we live in now.
Yeah.
Donald Trump has wiped out those gains entirely, and working class voters at that level are about even between the parties. So it's Republican voters as well who have suffered and will suffer the pain of healthcare costs going up or SNAP benefits going away.
Yeah. And so as we get ready to wrap up, Katie, your thoughts on, you know, will the president even pay attention to this? Because he sort of kept his hands clean during this whole, you know, federal shutdown. He barely spoke about it. He was in other countries. Will, you know, these extensions to the subsidies, all of that, will it become a focal point for him? Your thoughts?
Well, Democrats are certainly going to try to force the issue, right? Yeah. And I think that this whole, as you pointed out, this whole landscape of the shutdown was one in which he was very much disengaged. He was focused on going to Asia. He was focused on the construction at the White House, right, some of the refurbishments he's doing over there. And so I think Democrats, you know, to the earlier caller's point, are going to continue to press him on this issue.
Yeah.
Several, right, interviewers have asked Speaker Mike Johnson, other leaders, Republican leaders, what is your party's plan for health care? And they don't really have an answer, to the point where even Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene is taking her own party to task.
That's an interesting one.
That will be the issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Great insights from Katie Edmondson from The New York Times, Sahil Kapoor from NBC News. Thanks to you both for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you.
Thank you.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about the pending end to the longest government shutdown in U.S. history. A provisional Senate government funding deal passed last night thanks to a handful of moderate Democrats who crossed party lines.
That deal did not include the Democrats' key demand, an extension of the ACA tax subsidies to help people afford health insurance on the exchanges. And that has left many in the party feeling frustrated and angry, including our next guest, Congressman Brendan Boyle, a Democrat who represents Pennsylvania's 2nd District, which is right here in Philadelphia. Congressman Boyle, welcome to the program.
Yeah, great to be with you both.
Yes, and to our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, our questions of the day. What's your reaction to the step towards ending the shutdown? Was it all worth it? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop your comments in the chat. Congressman Boyle, we want to ask you the same questions we're asking our listeners. What's your reaction to this step, and was it worth it to your party?
I am not happy about what eight of my Senate Democratic colleagues on the other side of the Capitol have done. And frankly, I don't understand it. Donald Trump, I'll actually cite the words of President Donald Trump, someone I'm normally not quoting positively. But after the election, he said this shutdown was about health care, and it was one of the two main reasons why Republicans lost so badly. The American people, by overwhelming numbers in Pennsylvania and frankly in every state, voted for Democrats and punished Republicans at the polls, because it turns out inflicting $1 trillion worth of cuts to health care in order to fund tax breaks for billionaires is not popular. So to have just gone through an election, to have seen those results, to have seen other polling data that also is consistent with those positive results, to then turn around and give up and get nothing in return just does not make sense to me. And it doesn't make sense to any other congressional Democrat I've spoken to over the last 24 hours, whether that Democrat happens to be progressive, classically liberal, or even right of center.
Mm. Okay, so you say nothing in return. Of course, that's not how the eight characterize it. Let me play this clip from Angus King, who's technically an independent, but caucuses with the Democrats. He's from Maine. And this is how he explained the rationale for voting for this compromise deal.
What I'm saying is, what was your strategy, man? What was your end game? If we're going to extend the shutdown another week, another month, through Christmas, Thanksgiving, is that going to get us anywhere? The point is, there never was an end game if the initial strategy didn't work. And now we have one. We're going to have, as I say, a guaranteed vote on the ACA. And it may not succeed. I grant that. But a reasonable chance, 10, 20%, 30%, is a lot better than 0%, which is where we were as of yesterday morning.
So Senator King is saying there was just 0% of compromise here on the extended subsidies. They were getting nowhere with Trump. They were getting nowhere with Republicans. Now, by at least guaranteeing this vote later in the year, or not guaranteeing, but at least getting a handshake agreement on a vote later this year, they've got some chance. And that is something. What's your response?
Honestly, he's a fine person, but it's really a laughable defense. A pinky promise from John Thune is not an agreement. Speaker Mike Johnson has already said he wouldn't even call it up And that's even if the Senate did pass it when this alleged vote is supposed to take place next month. There's also a fundamental misunderstanding about the urgency of this. We don't have until January 31st to solve this problem because premium rates are already being set right now. Mm-hmm. The deadline for open enrollment is actually before that second week or right around that second week of December and would take effect January 1st. I would also point out, and I think it's sometimes been lost in this, the Medicare provider cuts also are taking effect come January 1st. Finally, I would just remind really anyone in the other chamber or frankly anyone who's listening that after those shockingly bad election results for Republicans on Tuesday night, you did have a number of House Republicans, including one in our area in South Jersey, talk very negatively about what the next midterm election is likely to be for Republicans.
But do you think that was going to materialize into a change in their negotiating position now or in the next month or two? Because I can understand being nervous about 2026, but that doesn't mean in 2025 you're ready to negotiate.
Well, I mean, I would point out that a number of House Republicans who are in those swing seats have already come out in favor of a one-year extension in the ACA tax premiums. Mm-hmm. That's not me saying it. That's them saying it. That's what they were pushing for. That is, a pretty reasonable compromise that could have been struck and was being talked about in just the last few days. So I really don't understand the strategy here. And I finally think I would say is I've spoken to a number of Senate Democrats who I happen to be friends with. There is real frustration within that Senate Democratic caucus that these folks apparently went off on their own and did this.
Judy on YouTube says it still has to go to the House. Rep. Jeffries just held a press conference and said the House Dems will hold the line. What tools do you Democrats have in your toolbox at this point, considering where we are in the Senate? Is there anything left?
Yeah, so a couple things on that. First, the Senate, because of their Byzantine rules, actually hasn't finally passed this. They have a few more hoops they have to jump through. So I haven't given up hope that perhaps one Senate Democrat would change his or her mind, because this did just only clear the initial step by one vote. But if this goes to the House of Representatives, I would expect almost every House Democrat would vote no. I certainly will be voting no. Last time you had a couple of House Republicans also vote no, and it narrowly passed. So I do think there's some suspense if and when this so-called agreement, essentially pinky promise, reaches the House.
Erica says, this smells a lot like the Philadelphia sanitation worker strike. They held out for so long to settle for so little. Aaliyah says, the folks that caved are complete sellouts. Remember them at the midterm elections. Vote them out. They should have held the line. Will there be primary consequences? Should there be primary consequences for the Democrats and the one independent who decided to vote for this deal?
Right now, I'm focused on trying to save the health care of the American people and the people right here in Pennsylvania. More than 15 million Americans are slated to lose their health care over the course of the next year, according to the Congressional Budget Office. And the health care premiums in this state for those who are on our statewide exchange, Penny, is projected to go up an average of 102%. And that is according to the top official who administers that program. That is something that is not 2 years away, 3 years away. It is literally right in front of us right now.
No, but another thing that was happening,
that is the main thing. That is the main thing that matters.
Another thing that was happening right now, though, was the folks potentially losing SNAP benefits. Of course, we don't exactly know what the courts would have done, but there was pain happening for other people. How do you balance here the ongoing pain felt by travelers, by SNAP recipients, against the sort of future pain of the folks who are dependent on the ACA and those exchanges? I mean, this feels like a legitimately difficult decision, and I'm curious why you put that ACA extension, that pain, sort of prioritize it.
I don't agree with the way you're characterizing it. I'm not the one inflicting that pain. It is President Trump and his administration who is making a conscious choice. And that is to ignore two different court decisions that have already said the law is clear. Those funds that are already appropriated for SNAP and in the contingency fund need to be released. I believe the pressure was all on those who are withholding the SNAP funds as opposed to those of us who have been fighting for their release.
Yeah, I wonder, Congressman, how do you keep America's attention on this issue? Because it took days. I mean, you know, there was crime was the top story when this shutdown started. And then there was ICE, and there were so many other stories that sort of, you know, took over the attention span of America. And finally, people were starting to pay attention. How do you keep the ACA at the forefront?
You know, I think that is regardless of the end and regardless of my extreme disappointment and frustration, one of the positives to come out of this experience is healthcare is now, as President Trump himself even acknowledged, healthcare is now front and center. People who maybe didn't know before this shutdown know now about the dramatic increases in premiums that are taking place, know about the millions of people who were slated to lose their health care. I would also point out, to go back to SNAP for a second, let's not forget the original sin here. It's not the shutdown. Included in what President Trump used to call the big, beautiful bill, included in that $187 billion worth of cuts to SNAP, the largest cuts to nutrition assistance and food assistance in American history. That's because Republicans did that. And almost every single Republican in the House and Senate voted for it. More people are aware of this today than they were 6 weeks ago. But moving forward, we have to continue to talk about this. Unfortunately, I think we will have that opportunity because Republicans seem so hell-bent on avoiding fixing this problem and flatly refusing to do so.
That is Congressman Brendan Boyle, Democrat representing Pennsylvania's 2nd District right here in Philadelphia. Appreciate the time today, Congressman Boyle.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you. We have so many comments.
Yeah. A lot of you don't like this. Jamie from Ballykinwood. I cannot believe Democrats are caving into the bullies. Gabriel, the Democrats gave in too early. On and on like that. Yeah. You get the point.
Citizen Dave, it wasn't worth it. That's what Citizen Dave says.
Pretty one note in the comments today, I have to be honest.
Yeah. Thank you to our producers for putting the show together. Thanks to Debbie Bilden, Andreas Copes, with assistance today from Paige Murray Bessler. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calique engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2, here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.